dying too. Do you really want that to happen without finding out if you guys would have worked? Jesse just stared at her for a moment. He felt like he'd been ambushed into this conversation, and now he was rapidly losing control of his own position in it.
It wouldn't work, he said weakly. Too much has happened. The timing
wasn't right before, she agreed. But get your head out of your ass and look around. She's right here, literally in front of you, and you're in love with her. She crossed her arms over her chest, as though resting her case. Jesse wondered how long she'd been waiting to make this speech.
Molly, he said wearily, I love you, I do. You're my favorite vampire ever. But I can't talk about this with you right now.
Fine, she huffed, raising her hands in an I-give-up gesture. At least she wasn't pregnant, she muttered. That would have really fucked things up.
Jesse froze. Scarlett had said not to mention the baby in front of Molly, but he hadn't realized that she'd actually convinced Molly that it was a false alarm. Molly took his silence for shock.
Sorry, she said, looking actually contrite. I probably wasn't supposed to tell you, but she had this pregnancy scare. It's all good, though.
She shook her head.
Can you imagine? The entire old world would be after that kid, and Scarlett thinks she's barely keeping her head above water now.
She's stronger than she thinks she is,
Jesse found himself saying.
Well, duh, Molly scoffed. That's not the point.
The elevator bell dinged, and a couple made their way down the hall toward them, giggling. They went quiet as they passed, giving curious looks to Jesse in his robe. He turned back to the hotel room door.
Good night, Molly.
Tell Scarlett I'll call her at sunset, she said, turning to go.
Molls?
She paused.
Thanks for the delivery. You're a good friend.
Molly just cocked an eyebrow.
So are you, she said. But we both know that's not going to be enough for either of you. Not forever.
Jesse took the backpack into the bathroom and unzipped it. Molly had packed him brand new clothes, still bearing tags from Nordstrom. She'd chosen dark pink boxers printed with little flamingos, just to be a jerk, but Jesse wasn't about to complain. He was lucky she hadn't packed him a thong. He set the alarm clock and his cell phone alarm before climbing into the empty side of the massive bed, careful not to disturb Scarlett. Then he lay staring at the ceiling, running through it all in his head. Shadow being taken, the confrontation with Dashiell, all that fruitless running around searching for the Barghest, and then, of course, the explosion at the Schmidt crime scene. Dashiell and his people would be busy cleaning up that mess tonight, but when they met in the morning, they would need a new game plan. Jesse had no idea what to do next. They'd failed to find Shadow, and they'd learned very little at the crime scene, probably because it had really been a trap.
A damned good trap.
The Luparii kept getting ahead of them. Jesse rolled onto his side, looking at Scarlett's sleeping form. He'd left the bathroom light on, telling himself it was for her, but part of him knew the truth. Now that things were finally quieting down, the fears he'd been fighting all day were seeping to the front of his mind. The memory of Sabine rummaging through his mind was so strong. It felt like greasy fingerprints had been left behind. Jesse knew that was ridiculous. Whatever she'd done to him had been broken the second Scarlett got close. But he was pathetically grateful that Scarlett had wanted to share the bed. Partly, this was so he could keep reassuring himself that she was alive. But there was also no way the Luparii could put him back in the twisted slumber while he was this close to her.
Not that they can put you in the slumber at all, he told himself.
The witch, Sabine, had obviously needed to be nearby. Right? What if she'd taken a lock of his hair or something and could now use it to fuck with Jesse anytime she wanted? He worried over this for a long time and even went into the bathroom to check his hair in the mirror, feeling silly. He climbed back into the bed. He didn't want to touch Scarlett without her permission, but he found himself scooting closer and closer in the king-size bed until he could just feel her back against his arm. His behavior reminded him of his parents' dog, Max, who preferred to sleep so he was just touching someone to reassure himself that they were still there. Only then was Jesse able to sleep. Chapter 23. The next thing I knew, Jesse was nudging me awake.
Scarlet. Scar.
I grunted at him and cracked an eyelid. I'd rolled over in the night and was facing him. His brown eyes seemed to shine in the dim light from the bathroom.
I said eloquently. Time's it. Just after 4 a.m. We're supposed to be at Dashiell's in an hour.
What day is it?
Sunday.
Traffic won't be bad. Sleep more,
I mumbled. But then I remembered the night before and abruptly sat up in bed.
Wyatt?
Jesse was already checking his phone.
Hayne texted. He said Wyatt is alive, but it's touch and go. They're feeding him blood as fast as they can.
I thought about that for a moment, then reached out my hand.
Gimme.
Jesse handed over the phone, and I scrolled through the contacts and called Lex, who sounded awake, thank God. The moment she answered, I said,
It's Scarlet. Your blood's, like, special, right?
There was a pause, and then she said dryly,
I take it Jesse's alive?
Oops, I had forgotten to update her the day before.
I'm sorry,
I said, meaning it.
Yes, he's okay. Here, I'll put you on speaker.
I hit the right button, and Jesse said,
Hey, Lex.
Hey, you okay?
More or less.
Good.
She cleared her throat.
Yes, Scarlet, Boundary Witch blood is unique in some ways. Why?
Could I, have some?
Before she could answer, I explained about Wyatt getting shot and then getting a leg blown off.
Someone blew up your van?
Lex said in disbelief.
What the hell are you into now?
I couldn't really take offense to that. Something big, I think. We don't know a lot yet, but we're working on it.
Can you come donate blood to Wyatt?
I wasn't sure it would be enough to help him, but if Wyatt died and there was something I hadn't tried...
I have my own life here, Scarlet, remember?
She said, clearly losing patience with me.
There are people who are under my protection, too. I can't just fly to L.A. at the drop of a hat.
But then you must understand what I'm going through, I pushed.
Wyatt took a hit that was meant for me, right after taking bullets that were meant for me.
Please?
There was another moment of silence, and I started to think I'd gone too far. But then Lex sighed and said,
I could send Katya.
Jesse and I exchanged a surprised look. Lex's biological aunt, Katya, had come to L.A. a few months earlier as a sort of involuntary henchman for a man named Oscar, who had been seeking revenge against Molly. Oscar was dead now, and as part of a deal with Lex's boss, Maven, we'd sent Katya to Colorado. I hadn't thought to ask what had happened to her afterward, even when I was right there in Boulder.
Stupid Scarlet.
But Katya did have Boundary Witch blood, like Lex.
What's she up to these days?
I said. Best to be cautious.
Right now, Maven has her traveling around Colorado as a sort of vampire ambassador, checking in with various communities. She's in...
There was a pause, like Lex was checking a calendar.
Grand Junction today, but I could probably get her on a flight this afternoon.
I forced myself not to jump up and down quite yet.
Will that be okay? Will you get in trouble?
There was a pause, and Lex cleared her throat.
Actually, Katya is, understandably, hesitant to swear an oath of loyalty to Maven, given what happened with Oscar. She helps with things on a freelance basis, but it can get tense. It might be good for everyone if she takes a short trip to L.A. Maybe she can clear the air there, too.
Oh, right. Katja had kind of terrorized the city a little bit. I took about 2 seconds to ponder whether I'd get in trouble with Dashiell for bringing her back to town without consulting him, but decided I didn't care. If Lex trusted Katja, I did too. And if she could help Wyatt, it was worth the trouble.
That would be amazing. Thank you.
I gave her Haynes' phone number and asked her to have Katja call him as soon as she arrived. I didn't know where they were keeping Wyatt, but Haynes could arrange the blood donation. Before we hung up, Lex said,
"Listen, I was going to call you today anyway. Maven remembered something else last night, about the little girl and Azad."
"Okay." Jesse gave me a curious look, and I mouthed, "Tell you later."
"She and her grandmother both had specialties."
It took me a moment to parse that one out. Most witches were trade witches, meaning they could work with just about any kind of magic, but a small percentage had a specialty. Lex, for example, could only work boundary magic. But if the female Null in Azad came from a line of specialty magic, and she'd passed it on to her witchling baby, that meant that I needed to figure out whether or not my own mother's witch blood had been specialized or not.
"Okay,"
I said at last. "I'll put it on my to-do list." "Thanks, Lex." As soon as I hung up, I threw back the covers. Jesse obviously wanted to ask about Lex's information, but I said,
"I'll tell you about it in the car. We need to stop back at the cottage before Dashiell's."
Jesse looked at the clock on the bedside table.
"We don't have time, and it's not safe."
"I know, but I need more knives, and my bulletproof vest."
As I'd figured, that made Jesse waver, but he shook his head.
"We can buy you a new one. We've got the credit card."
"But it's a lot harder to replace my knives and my knife belt," I argued. My voice sounded firm, for maybe the first time in the past 3 days.
"Look, if we're late, I can keep Dashiell awake past dawn, but who knows where he's going to send us today? I'm not going to feel safe unless I have my knife belt." He sighed.
"Fine. In and out, though, okay?"
I nodded. "Promise."
Half an hour later, we were heading into Marina Del Rey. I had filled Jesse in on most of the trip to Boulder, including what Maven had said about the baby.
"Did she give you any advice?"
Jesse asked when I'd finished. We were nearly at the exit to get to the cottage.
"No, that's when Kirsten called me to come rescue you from certain death," I said solemnly.
Jesse rolled his eyes, but didn't take the bait. I had texted Dashiell to explain why we'd be late, and he had very succinctly texted back, "The Lexus has bulletproof windows," which was so comforting.
"Okay, fine, Jesse found it comforting.
Personally, I thought the Lexus was a very nice car, but its plush seats made me feel like I was lying on my back, which made me feel exposed, which made me want my knives even more. Not to mention my van." My van. It was stupid to be so sad about a vehicle that was replaceable, but goddammit, I had loved that van. Jesse made us cruise past the cottage a couple of times to check it out, but nothing seemed to have changed from the day before, and I didn't feel anyone with magic, even when I extended my radius as far as it would go. Jesse still insisted on checking the house, gun in hand, before waving me inside. I went straight to the bedroom closet and got out the bulletproof vest and my knife belt. My ex-boyfriend, Eli, had had it made for me by one of those companies that sells stuff at Renaissance festivals and comic book conventions and stuff. It was sized perfectly for my upper waist, so I could still move and sit down and everything without knives stabbing into my abdomen. I put on a tank top with a built-in sports bra, wriggled into the bulletproof vest, and strapped the knife belt on over that, adjusting the buckles to fit the vest's extra bulk. It was a little too easy. I'd lost weight. Opening the door so Jesse and I could talk, I went to the bucket of knives on my dresser and began loading them into the belt. Jesse came in and sat down on my bed, watching me slide knives into the little loops. Then he asked in a too casual voice, "Do you ever hear from Eli?" My fingers fumbled, and I dropped a knife on the floor and cursed. "Not really," I said once I'd recovered. "We've sort of agreed that I don't go to Hair of the Dog unless it's for work, and he doesn't come to meetings at Dashiell's unless Will orders it. I hear he started dating one of the new werewolves who came into town last year." Jesse's eyebrows quirked.
"Oh, really?"
"Yeah." I finished loading the belt, covered it with a soft, loose T-shirt, and plopped down on the bed next to him. "I've met her. She's tiny and cute and sort of obedient. Not a dog joke, I swear. She worships Eli, which he deserves, I guess. Frankly, I try not to think about it."
"That all sounds very emotionally healthy," Jesse said gravely.
I punched him in the arm. "Okay, why don't we talk about your quickie marriage and divorce?" I expected him to back down, but he just gave a little shrug.
"What do you want to know?"
"Oh, well played." I almost blew it off, but we'd never really discussed what had happened between him and the woman who'd ghostwritten his book. And if I was being honest, I was incredibly curious. "Why did it fall apart?" I finally said. I knew Jesse wouldn't have married the woman if he hadn't cared for her, and I wasn't so conceited as to think he was hung up on me, so something else must have tanked the relationship.
"It was my fault. She was nice and fun and easy to be with. I loved her, sort of. But mostly I was trying to will myself a normal life, or at least normal for L.A. You know, working regular hours on a creative project, date night with a wife, Sunday evenings at my parents', everything orderly and on schedule."
"That sounds kind of nice," I admitted. The only thing I had that approached a schedule involved my DVR.
"It was, for a while. And there was no big fight, no cheating, nothing like that. We finished the book, and a couple of months went by with her taking these meetings for our next project."
He shrugged, looking ashamed.
"But I kind of just woke up one morning and knew I was kidding myself. Fake it till you make it doesn't apply to everything. And she couldn't understand what had changed."
He sighed, rubbing his forehead with the heel of his hand.
"The problem was that nothing had changed. I'd changed my life, but not myself. And I'd been using her to make myself feel like a different person. I don't feel great about it."
I kind of understood what he meant. For a long time, I'd sensed Eli and I weren't working, that we were never really going to be able to fit together the way either of us needed. But I'd willfully ignored that because I thought I'd be happier with a compromised relationship than with no relationship at all. And I'd pretended to be fine with things that weren't. I wanted to, I don't know, pat Jesse's shoulder or tell him it was okay or something, but it was just too awkward. He met my eyes again.
"Does that answer your question?"
I nodded. "Ready to go?"
"Yeah."
Then he froze.
"Did you hear that?"
"What?"
"Someone just knocked on the front door."
"Oh." I squinted at the clock. It wasn't even 5 a.m. Who the hell would be coming over? I couldn't see the Luparii deciding to knock. Well, not again, anyway. I got up and moved toward the bedroom door, starting to extend my radius.
"Hang on,"
Jesse said. He was reaching for his gun in its side holster.
"It could be..."
Then there was a familiar bark. Jesse and I locked eyes, and I could see him opening his mouth to tell me to wait, that it might be a trap. I ignored this. Instead, I threw the bedroom door open and ran for the front door, though I at least had the presence of mind to look through the peephole. There was a young man standing outside, bedraggled and exhausted looking, but I barely glanced at him. My fingers scrabbled at the locks, and I threw the door wide. "Shadow!" I cried out. The barghest knocked me flat on my back. Chapter 24. Jesse couldn't help but smile as he watched the bar guest slobber all over Scarlet as she laughed, tears running down her face. Shadow's fur, the little she had, was matted and filthy, and her dry, pebbled skin was obviously streaked with blood around her mouth and sides. The blood was coated in what looked like thick brown dust. Her tail, which naturally clubbed off at about 10 inches long, was wagging back and forth so fiercely that Jesse was sure it would leave a welt if he stepped within its reach. A small cloud of dust was coming off her tail. Then Shadow turned to Jesse, rearing up and putting her front paws on his shoulders so she could lick his face, too.
"Ack! Down! Please!" Jesse said.
When Shadow finally dropped back to all fours, Jesse turned his attention toward the young man, one hand going to rest on his gun. The kid was maybe 18, and he was even filthier than Shadow, covered in the same dirt. There was a strip of what looked like his shirt tail tied around one arm, and a brownish-red stain had soaked through it.
Hi,
the kid said, shifting his weight from one side to the other. Scarlet climbed to her feet.
Who are you?
I'm Owen. Your dog or whatever saved me, and then she was super insistent that we needed to come here.
He blushed.
She kind of herded me like I was a sheep, actually. Is this where... are you her owner?
Shadow's head snapped around so she could give him a dirty look. Scarlet just smiled, reaching down to scratch behind the Bargist's furry ear. She was practically radiating relief and joy.
"And nobody owns Shadow," she corrected. "But I pay the rent and buy the dog food, yeah? I'm Scarlet."
She held out her hand, which the kid shook.
"Okay, Shadow, that's her name. Okay, and you're Scarlet."
The kid nodded to himself like this was a really important mystery he'd just solved.
"You're the one."
Scarlet's expression hardened a little.
"The one what?"
The kid took a step back, scuffing his feet.
The one they went to kill last night? We would have warned you, but we didn't escape till after. And then I didn't know how to find you."
He pushed out an anxious breath and tried for a smile. Jesse realized that beyond all the caked dirt and blood smears, his face was familiar.
"What's your name?"
Jesse asked.
"I'm Owen. Owen Schmidt."
Jesse and Scarlet exchanged a look.
"You're Carl's grandson," she said. "I saw you in the picture at his house."
The boy didn't actually fall down, but his whole body seemed to crumple, like someone had extracted all the oxygen from him.
"Yeah, they killed him. But they wanted me alive, see, because I..."
"Because you have witch blood," Scarlet said quietly. "Lupari witch blood."
"Yeah,"
the kid said, looking at Scarlet with astonishment.
"How did you know that?"
There was a heartbeat of silence, and then Jesse and Scarlet both started asking the kid questions at the same time. Owen Schmidt raised both hands and took a tiny step backward, giving Scarlet a pleading look.
"Look, I'll explain the whole thing as much as I can, I swear. But first, and I know I'm a stranger, but I would be really, really deeply grateful if you'd let me use your shower. Please?"
There was a flurry of activity after that. While Scarlet found the kid some clean towels and sweats, Jesse fed Shadow ostrich steaks from the freezer. She gobbled them up still frozen, along with about 2 gallons of water, and Jesse knew that he and Scarlet had been right about the Lupari's plan to starve her to death. Then Scarlet called Dashiell to explain the situation, and Jesse insisted on checking Owen's wound before the kid got it wet in the shower. When he untied the bandage, he let out a low whistle. It was a nasty-looking scrape on top of a deep bruise, but it didn't look like it would need stitches.
"It's not as bad as it looks," Owen said,
though he was wincing. I just didn't want to leave a blood trail for them to follow.
How did you get it?
Jesse asked.
Getting off the cage rock?
Owen said, as though that would explain everything. Jesse shook his head.
Never mind. Get yourself cleaned up, and you can tell us the whole story.
He left Owen in the bathroom, hearing the shower go on almost immediately. Scarlett wasn't talking in the living room anymore, but he found her in the backyard, sluicing muddy water off the bargast with a garden hose. A sponge and a bottle of dog shampoo sat beside her.
I know it's cold, Scarlett was saying, but we both know what would have happened if I let you use the bathtub again.
Shadow's lips drew open in a terrifying doggy grin.
What would have happened?
Jesse asked as he walked over. She would have shaken muddy water all over the inside of the house.
Again?
Scarlett gave the bar guest an exaggerated glare, but Shadow was unrepentant, dancing around in the spray of water, pleased as hell with herself. Jesse couldn't blame her. She was a hero.
I can help,
he offered. While Scarlett ran the hose, Jesse bent slightly so he could rub dog shampoo into the Bargist's furry parts, gently cleaning her pebbled skin with the sponge.
What did Dashiell say?
He asked as they worked.
He accepts postponing the meeting. He wants us to talk to the kid and get the whole story, then call Hayne. We are provisionally allowed to wake Dashiell during the day, if it's an absolute emergency.
Whoa.
Jesse had some idea of how seriously Dashiell took his security. The one time Scarlett had woken him up during the day, he'd slapped her across the face. Jesse still ground his teeth a little at the memory.
We are not, however, Scarlett went on, to take Owen to the mansion, in case this is all a trap.
Huh.
It had occurred to Jesse that Owen's sudden arrival could be a ploy, of course, but he hadn't thought the possibility through that far. If Owen was with the Luparii, playing nice with them wasn't a bad plan. It could potentially get him into Dashiell's mansion during the day with a null in tow, pretty much the only way the Cardinal Vampire could be killed, short of an army. Then again, in that scenario, Shadow would kind of have to be in on the betrayal, which made the whole idea laughable.
Should we be worried that the kid will run?
Scarlett asked him. Jesse shook his head.
I don't think he's going anywhere. He was limping when he walked into the bathroom, and he's scared out of his mind. Besides, where can he go on foot that Shadow here couldn't track him?
Shadow licked the air near Jesse's face appreciatively.
What do you think, Shadow?
Scarlett asked the bargast.
Can we trust Owen?
Shadow's head tilted sideways for a second, a perfect mimicking of, let me think about it. Then she licked the air again and sort of pawed the ground in front of Scarlett.
She thinks so,
Scarlett translated to Jesse. She rinsed the bargast one more time and then turned off the hose faucet.
I know you're going to shake the water off,
she said in a warning tone, mock glaring at Shadow.
But if you wait until Jesse and I get back inside, I will give you one of those 3-foot ostrich bones I've been saving.
Shadow's club tail waved, but there was something mischievous about it. Scarlett dropped the nozzle and grinned at Jesse.
Run!
They dashed around the side of the house, Scarlett laughing breathlessly as they narrowly avoided an exploding grenade of water. For a creature only half covered in fur, Shadow could really shake off water with the best of them. Scarlett paused at the front door, leaning against the wall for support. She was still grinning, and her joy was infectious.
I got her back, she said, her breathing finally slowing down.
There were tears of happiness in her eyes.
I don't know what's going to happen with the,
She gestured at her stomach.
Or the Luparii, or whatever. But I got her back.
Her face broke into a joyous smile.
I got you both back.
Without thinking about it, Jesse took 2 quick steps forward so he was inches away from her. Scarlett's grin faded, but she didn't move away. For once, she didn't even make a joke. She just gazed up at him seriously. When he slid his hands around her hips underneath the bulletproof vest, she reached up with both hands and entwined them around his neck. And then Shadow came rampaging around the corner of the cottage, nosing her way between them in a total dog move. Jessie instinctively stepped back, but not before catching the look of relief on Scarlet's face. She was glad the bar guest had interrupted them. Shadow pawed at the doorknob, and Scarlet twisted it so she could barrel in.
Let's, Scarlet mumbled, and then she ducked past him into the house.
Jessie cursed himself. What the hell had he been thinking, trying to kiss her? This was Molly's fault, he decided. She'd gotten into his head. But if Scarlet could compartmentalize, so could he. The shower was off when he went back inside. A moment later, Owen emerged in a pair of Scarlet's baggiest sweatpants and a too-big hair-of-the-dog t-shirt that had probably belonged to Eli. Owen was a bit older than Jessie had first thought, probably 20 or so, with light brown skin that nearly matched Jessie's own. His eyes were gray-blue, same as his grandfather. He looked scared and a little scrawny, and Jessie wondered whether the Luparii had been feeding him. Scarlet must have had the same thought, because she ushered them into the kitchen and started making peanut butter and jelly sandwiches.
"Is there someone you need to call?"
Jessie asked the kid.
"Someone who's worried about you?"
Owen tilted his head, thinking it over for a moment.
"Yes and no. My dad's not in the picture, and Mom died 3 years ago. I've got lots of cousins. You saw the picture. But they're all at least an hour away. I was living with Grandpa until last year, when I finally started college at Cal State Long Beach."
He didn't so much trail off as nod off, and Jessie realized the kid was past exhaustion.
"Owen?"
he said. The boy's eyes snapped open.
"Right, I'm in the dorms, but I don't think it's safe to go back."
He looked down at his hands, which bore a number of small scrapes and bruises.
"They got my wallet with my student ID card. That's the first place they'll look for me." "Yeah, well, this is probably the second,"
Jessie said, looking at Scarlet. She handed him a sandwich and gave one to Owen.
"We should move."
"You're not wrong," she said, "but to where?" Jessie thought it over as they ate, standing around the kitchen or perched on stools. She was right. It was a problem.
"If they've been watching us for a couple of months, they know all about Will and Dashiell and Kirsten. It'd be too easy to find us there."
"And Shadow is too memorable for an anonymous hotel," Scarlet added, giving the bar guest a fond look. "If one guest takes a picture of her in the lobby and posts it to social media, we're screwed."
"True."
The blinds in the kitchen were closed, but Jessie still had that itchy feeling, like someone was targeting them.
"We still need to get out of here, though."
Owen was listening to the conversation with a kind of detached interest, like a kid whose divorced parents were determining where he would stay that weekend.
"What about Hair of the Dog?" Scarlet suggested.
"I still have a key for emergencies, and no one will be there for hours yet." Jessie nodded and grabbed an extra sandwich for the road.
"Let's go."
He glanced at Owen.
"You can explain on the way."
Chapter 25. We crammed into the Lexus. I told Jessie he should drive because I didn't like the car, but I think he knew I was nauseous again. Jessie and I had enough room up front, but Owen was smooshed in the back seat with Shadow, who immediately began fogging up the window as she hulked in the seat next to him. Jessie covertly hit the child safety locks so Owen couldn't bail out. I had about 1,000 questions for the kid, but first I had to call Will and let him know where we were going. He was awake, despite the early hour, and Dashiell had called him to say the meeting was off, so he knew about Shadow and Owen. Without saying it outright, I intimated that we were going to hole up at the bar for a few hours. The Luparii probably knew about Hair of the Dog, but hopefully they wouldn't expect us there before it was open. Plus, it was on a busy commercial stretch of Pico, which would be much harder to attack in broad daylight on a Sunday morning.
Fine, yeah, that's fine,
Will said distractedly.
I'm not sure we're even going to open today.
He sounded even worse than I'd expected. Is everything okay? I said cautiously. To his credit, Will didn't respond with, "Of course it isn't fucking okay, you moron."
I'm still trying to get as many of my pack out of the city as I can,
he explained.
But it's complicated because of territory. On top of that, half the wolves I talk to hear the word Luparii, and they want to stay and get their revenge for Drew and Terrence.
Oh. Trying to put a positive spin on it, I said, there's always the other half? Will sighed.
Many of them think running is the coward's way out, and I'm a bad leader for suggesting it.
So much for that positive spin. I'm sorry, Will, I said, meaning it. Jesse gave me an inquisitive look, but I gave him a little head shake. Hopefully we'll have some answers soon. As soon as I hung up the phone, Jesse said,
How's he doing?
Not great. I glanced over my shoulder at Owen, who was making himself as small as possible. Jesse got the message. I didn't want to fill him in while the kid was listening. Owen picked up on the attention and straightened up just a little.
Okay. Where should I start?
I was about to say something dumb like, at the beginning, but Jesse jumped in with,
Start with yesterday morning, when they killed your grandfather.
Yeah, that was probably a better spot.
Okay. Well, I wasn't even supposed to be at Grandpa's yesterday, but I promised him I'd stop by in the morning and help pack boxes. He was supposed to be moving from the house to an assisted living place in a few weeks. Anyway, around 10, there was a knock on the door. Grandpa had fallen asleep in his chair, so I went to answer it.
He paused, and I turned sideways in the car seat so I could look at him.
Through the little window, I saw a woman, maybe your age, and an older man. He was probably 60 or so. And I opened the door.
His voice broke, and guilt washed over his face.
I just thought they were lost, you know? I mean, this is Long Beach, in the middle of a nice suburban area in broad daylight. Hell, the woman had a yoga mat on a strap.
I would have probably done the same thing, Jesse assured him. I doubted that, but it was a nice thing to say.
Go on. The man pulled out a gun and made me back up into the living room. Grandpa was just standing up to follow me to the door, but he saw the man, and his whole face turned white. I mean, Grandpa was a pale guy anyway, but for a minute I honestly thought he was having a heart attack. But he knew the other guy. He called him Thierry, and Thierry knew Grandpa's real name, Otto. He ordered Grandpa to give him the scroll.
Okay, that was a lot of information. I said, What do you mean his real name? At the exact same moment Jesse said, What scroll? Owen chose Jesse's question first.
It's a spell, he explained. Grandpa stole it from the other Luparii a long time ago. That's why he left them. Changed his name and hid in Los Angeles.
Jesse and I looked at each other. Carl Schmidt had been a Luparii deserter? Jesse told Owen to go on.
Okay. Well, Grandpa tried to play dumb at first, and the blonde lady opened up her yoga mat. It was actually a false compartment. Kind of smart. And pulled out this...
Owen's voice dropped into an odd hush.
Sword. I've never seen anything like it. It was shining. Not shiny, shining. I don't know if it was actually glowing or if it was designed to catch light weird or what, but when Grandpa saw it, he staggered and kind of fell back in his chair, like he'd been shot or something. It seems like he recognized it.
Owen's voice shook a little. We were getting to the worst part of the story. Shadow, to my surprise, laboriously turned herself around on the seat so she could rest her head on Owen's shoulder. He patted her absently, his eyes fixed on his car window as though it were a television screen, and he was watching the whole scene again.
I was standing by the entrance to the living room, and the lady lifted the sword and sort of rested it on my shoulder. It only, like, touched my skin. No pressure at all, but I started bleeding.
He raised one hand to a shallow cut on his neck. I hadn't noticed it earlier under all the grime.
And Grandpa just gave up. He told Thierry where to find the scroll, in an old trunk in the crawl space. Thierry went up there, but the woman stayed where she was, with the sword on me. I wanted to punch her, to duck away or something, but Grandpa told me not to try anything. He sounded so scared, but I could tell he was scared for me, because of the sword. But I knew Thierry was gonna come back down and was gonna kill us both, so I...
He trailed off, looking ashamed. I saw Jesse open his mouth to ask, but I overrode him.
You tried magic, I said softly.
The kid nodded. He was a witch, but he hadn't used magic in a long time, and it weakened him. Owen had probably once been medium-powered, but magic is like a muscle. You have to keep using it to keep having much of it.
I was so stupid, Owen burst out. I tried to twist up her shoes to make her stumble or fall down so I could duck out from under the sword, you see? But it barely ruffled her. She laughed at first. But when Thierry came back downstairs, she told him I might be useful.
His voice sped up, like he was just trying to get the next part over with.
Thierry gave the woman the scroll and his gun, and she handed him the sword really carefully. Then he told my grandpa to kneel down.
I'd had to turn all the way around again. Sitting sideways was making me carsick. But now I snuck a look back at him. Tears were rolling down his face.
Grandpa knew they were going to kill him. I started to yell, but the woman hit me and I shut up. I was crying. Grandpa asked them not to do it in front of me, but I said it was okay. I wanted to be with him, you know, so someone who loved him was there.
The boy was openly weeping again now. Heartsick, I reached into the center console for tissues and remembered that we weren't in my van. Beatrice's car didn't even have fast food napkins. Shadow solved the problem by licking the tears off Owen's face. He grimaced and then let out a little laugh.
We know what happened after that, Jesse said, trying to spare him.
But Owen shook his head.
No, you don't. Because when Thierry raised the sword and brought it down, he used no pressure. Basically just gravity. I don't know a ton about weapons, but I'm pretty sure the sharpest blade in the world can't do that.
Ah, shit. The sword was motherfucking magical. Like we didn't have enough problems.
You're right. That was good for us to know, Jesse said gently.
I knew him well enough to notice that as our conversation with Owen had gone on, Jesse's tone had changed from the one he uses with suspects to the one he uses with witnesses and victims. He believed Owen. So did I.
How did you get away from them?
Shadow saved me.
Owen said, sniffling, shooting a fond look at my Bargest.
Thierry and the woman tied my hands and put a blindfold on me. They drove for a while, maybe half an hour. When we got out, they wouldn't take the blindfold off. They marched me around this weird terrain, sort of up and down tiny hills. I stumbled a lot and fell a couple of times, too.
He lifted his hands to show me the cuts and bruises.
They finally had to take the blindfold off, and I saw we were on these weird sort of cliffs.
Weird how? I asked.
They weren't really cliffs, exactly. More like enormous pieces of concrete that had been scattered around like Legos. And there was all this graffiti on them.
I know where that is,
Jesse said quietly.
Owen continued.
They had set it up like a little campsite with all this gear and supplies, but they also seemed to have taken over some of the houses that backed up to it, so they'd go in and out. Anyway, there was this one flat piece of concrete that was balanced on a tall, skinny piece, like a three-dimensional letter T. On top of it was a heavy metal cage, and Shadow was inside. There were spikes on the inside of the cage, about every 6 inches, so Shadow couldn't throw herself against the bars. And even if she did somehow escape the cage, they'd set up more spikes on the ground, like the kind that pop people's tires in movies. It was pretty brutal.
I couldn't help shuddering. I reached back and rested a hand on Shadow's pebbly skin. She turned her head to lick my wrist.
It's okay. I'm fine.
What happened then?
Jesse asked.
They didn't know what to do with me because they weren't planning on taking a prisoner, see? So Tiri argued about it with the others for a while.
How many others?
Jesse interrupted.
How many people were there total?
I counted 7, but that might not have been all of them,
Owen answered, then continued.
Anyway, they eventually decided to put me in the cage with Shadow. They didn't want to feed her, and some of them were afraid she'd eat me, but Tiri said it would be a couple of days before Shadow's will broke that far, and they would have left with me by then. They got this stepladder and made me climb up into the cage. I've never been so scared in my life. I thought she was going to eat me.
I really couldn't blame the kid for that one. I had to be careful about taking Shadow for walks in public because people tended to cross the street to avoid us. Often they also crossed themselves.
But you escaped, I prompted.
The boy nodded.
We were there all day. I was so hot. I was really scared of Shadow, especially because she kept moving around.
He smiled.
But after a while, I figured out that she was trying to position herself to keep me in the shade so I wouldn't get sunburned.
Okay, my heart kind of swelled at that one. Shadow had exposed skin, but it never burned because of her healing abilities. So she'd tried to protect an innocent. Or maybe she'd just wisely decided the enemy of her enemy was a friend. I was never quite sure where Shadow stood, morally, when it came to people other than Jesse and me.
There was this beige girl who would come out sometimes and sit on a rock nearby, watching the whole area. She would wave her arms around, and the pieces of concrete would lift into the air and move. She was really powerful.
I looked at Jesse.
Beige girl?
He nodded.
Sabine, even her hair is beige, somehow.
Is that her name?
Owen's brow wrinkled.
Okay, well, she was scary as shit. I think she came out there just so I would see what she could do, so I would be scared of her. It totally worked. Anyway, maybe an hour before sunset, Tiri came out of one of the houses with this guy who was even older, like 70. They had a huge argument with the beige girl, Sabine, I guess, and this other guy with lots of guns.
That would be Killian,
Jesse said sourly.
Whoa, appropriate. Anyway, the old guy was furious with the two younger ones. I couldn't hear most of the conversation, but then the old guy started yelling and screaming about how they needed to kill Scarlet Bernard. And that's you,
Owen nodded at me.
When Shadow heard your name, she kind of went apeshit. That's when I realized she could understand what everyone was saying. She tried throwing herself against the bars, but it obviously hurt her. She coughed up blood.
Ouch.
I reached back to rest a hand on the furry side of Shadow's head. Her skin was basically impenetrable, but if something hit her hard enough, it was possible for her to get internal injuries. That explained some of the blood that had been matted into Shadow's fur. I had kind of assumed she'd eaten someone while they were escaping.
I tried to calm her down, because I could tell the younger two were leaving, and it was getting dark. It was almost like they'd forgotten about Shadow and me, because they were sure we couldn't get out, and they didn't really care if Shadow ate me.
He shrugged.
But, see, I had plenty of room to put my hands on the inside of the cage bars, because the spikes were too far apart. They were sized to prevent a dog, thing from ramming into them. Not a human. Eventually, we figured out that I could brace my feet on the bars between the spikes, and Shadow could push on my back. We managed to slide the cage so it was hanging off the side of the concrete platform, and I was able to, like, dangle over the side and jump past the spikes on the ground. That's how I hurt my shoulder when I landed on it. I moved the spikes on the ground out of the way. Shadow got loose, and we ran like hell.
Jesus. I wanted so badly to hug Shadow in that moment, but there was just no room in the back seat for me to do it. She saw my frustration and pushed her head and shoulders in between the front seats to lick my face. I laughed, hugging her head.
And you walked all night?
Jesse asked Owen. He nodded.
I tried to hitchhike, but no one would pick me up with Shadow, and I wasn't going to leave her. I didn't know where to go, but she was absolutely set on us walking along the ocean, so that's what we did, until we got to Marina del Rey.
Smart. The beaches were deserted at night, except for the occasional beach patrol, so no one would be bothered by a dog monster roaming free. And Owen wouldn't need to worry about his personal safety with Shadow there to protect him.
Good job, Shadow,
I told her.
Okay. Time for the big question, Owen,
Jesse said, taking the on-ramp for the 405. It had been a long time since I'd been on the west side of L.A. this early in the day. Everything looked so shiny and clean.
What's on the scroll?
Owen shook his head.
I don't know. It was in German or something sort of like German. All Grandpa would ever tell me was that it's old, bad magic, and it can't be destroyed. He said he even tried to burn it once, but it wouldn't catch fire. It can't be copied or even memorized either, which is a big deal. To use it, you have to have the scroll.
But you must have asked him what the spell was for, I persisted.
Grandpa just said it was a summoning spell. He insisted I was better off not knowing.
And you left it at that? I said in disbelief. No follow-up questions at all?
You had to have seen him, Owen said. He never meant to tell me about the Luparii at all, but I found out.
How?
Jesse asked. Owen shrank into himself a little.
Look, my whole life, I thought Grandpa was just, like, a grandpa, you know? I mean, he was a retired crane operator, but he used to make these amazing leashes out of braided rope. They were super complicated and beautiful, so much stronger than any other rope I'd seen, and he worked on them all the time, the way other men might whittle or do crossword puzzles. But he'd just put them in a box or give them to his own kids when they were grown to use with their dogs.
The kid winced, and I recognized the look of a shameful memory.
What did you do?
I asked.
When I was 16, I worked at this shitty pet supply store, and I stole a bunch of the leashes and put them out for sale. They were just sitting there in a box, and
he shook his head.
They sold really quickly, so I took out some more. Eventually, I'd made a pretty good dent in the box, and I took the cash, minus a finder's fee, because I was an asshole. And I gave it to Grandpa in this envelope. I thought,
I guess I thought he'd be excited. But he flipped.
Why?
Because they were Lupari leashes, he said quietly. Then I got it.
For controlling Bargists, I said. Owen nodded.
I guess his family had been making them for hundreds of years. They might as well have been trademarked. Grandpa demanded that I take them off the shelves, like, that night. He wanted me to look up which customers had purchased them and try to get them back, but I was too embarrassed. We got into a huge fight about it, and that finally pushed him to tell me the story. That he was born into a cultish family of witches who thought their life's purpose was to clear the earth of shapeshifter magic. The leashes were for the dogs they trained to hunt werewolves. It sounded so nuts. He shook his head. Then Grandpa had me bring this trunk down from the attic, and it was full of photos and spell books and things. There were a couple of pictures of the werewolves, and they were... He shuddered. They were terrifying. So when Grandpa said knowing anything else could get me killed, I believed him.
That wasn't the end of the story. At some point, Owen must have tried messing around with magic, activating his witch blood as a teen. But just then, a tiny chirping melody came out of Jesse's jacket pocket, and I recognized part of the theme song from Super Mario Brothers. Jesse made a face.
Sorry, that's Noah, texting.
Before Owen could continue his story, the phone chirped again, and then again. Annoyed, Jesse mumbled a curse in Spanish. We were a quarter mile from our exit, so he said to me,
Can you text him that I'll call him back later?
Sure. I dug the phone out of his jacket pocket and checked the screen. Then I stopped breathing.
Jesse, I said very softly, I need you to pull the car over.
What?
He gave me a sharp look.
We're on the freeway.
Please, Jesse, just pull over.
He started cursing again, but he cut across two lanes and slowed to a stop, nearly blocking off the exit lane to get on the 10. A car swerved in front of him to get on the on-ramp and blared its horn, but Jesse ignored it and slammed his thumb into the parking button.
What is it?
He demanded. I didn't want to do it to him, but I handed over the phone, fighting the urge to vomit. All three texts were the same picture. Jesse's brother lying on an inconspicuous patch of bare dirt. He'd been beaten. His shirt had been removed, probably to show off the deep blue bruises that covered his chest. His eyes were closed, but the skin around one eye was so puffed out that you couldn't even see it.
But that wasn't the worst part.
With shaking fingers, Jesse zoomed in on the photo, seeing what I'd already noticed. Noah's hair was drenched, and his entire body shone with sweat.
No,
Jesse whispered. From the back seat, Owen's alarmed voice said,
What? What is it?
I didn't bother turning around.
It's the twisted slumber.
Chapter 26. I think Jesse was about to call his brother's phone, but his cell rang first. Jesse answered it, listened for a few seconds, and snarled,
I'm not doing shit until I know he's alive.
Then his face clouded over with worry, and when I leaned closer, I could hear moaning. I'd only met Jesse's brother a few times, but even I recognized Noah's voice. It was so much like Jesse's. A man's voice came back on the line. Jesse listened for a moment longer, started to talk, and realized that whoever it was had hung up on him. He threw the phone forcefully onto the dash, where it bounced up and thunked against the windshield.
Jesse,
I began, but he got out of the car. That in itself shocked me, because we were on a Los Angeles freeway, which is basically certain death. It wasn't that crowded this early on a Sunday, but that actually made it scarier, because the cars were zooming past the driver's door at 80 miles per hour,
so fast they looked like part of a video game. But Jesse miraculously made it around the front of the car and stormed over to the guardrail, placing both hands on the barrier.
"What's going on?"
Owen said from the back seat. He sounded totally unnerved. I was right there with him. "Stay here," I told him, unbuckling. "Shadow, you too." She made a sound of protest, but I slipped out of the car quickly and walked over to Jesse. Slowly, I rested one hand on his shoulder. I could feel his back muscles bunch up as he leaned backward without letting go, rattling the railing as hard as he could.
"I'm so fucking stupid,"
he practically screamed.
"I knew they were going through my brain, that they knew everything about my life, but it never occurred to me that..."
His voice broke off, and he bowed his head, still clutching the railing. "What do they want?" I yelled over the noise from the freeway. Jesse finally let go and turned around, leaning his lower back against the railing. His eyes were red.
"They want you," he said simply. "They want me to trade your life for Noah's."
I raised my eyebrows. "They said that?" Jesse wiped at his face with the back of his hand.
"Of course not. Killian told me you wouldn't be harmed, that they are just going to lock you up for a couple of days while they conclude their business. But they've already tried to kill you 3 different times. I'm an idiot, but I'm not that dumb."
"When do they want to do the trade?" His eyes narrowed.
"Scarlet."
I held up a hand to say, "Bear with me." "When?"
"In an hour, at the caves in Griffith Park. They don't want us to have enough time to call anyone. He said they set a humans go-away perimeter spell by the canyon drive entrance. They'll know when you break it, so we can't sneak into the park and go around them. If they see anyone other than you and me, they'll kill my brother."
"They're desperate," I said loudly, thinking it through. "Broad daylight on a Sunday morning? That's bold, even for them. They probably came up with the kidnapping scheme 5 minutes after they realized Shadow had escaped. They don't know she's already with us, and they're hoping to get me out of the way before she finds me and goes into bodyguard mode." Jesse reached out and took my hand, drawing me close. The freeway noise was still loud, but at least we could use our normal speaking voices.
"Listen, I want you to take Owen and go to Hair of the Dog. Keep him safe."
"Hell no," I said. "I'm going with you to get Noah back." He was already shaking his head.
"Scar, they don't have to wait for us to get all the way into the park. They could have a sniper rifle pointed at the entrance, and the moment we drive up, your head explodes."
"How are you going to get into the park without me breaking the humans go-away spell, huh?" I challenged. "They may have thrown this together last minute, but they've thought it through. You need me just to get to Noah." He lowered his head so it was right by my ear.
"You're pregnant."
I flinched back, the wind whipping my hair around my face. "Nobody's perfect." He didn't smile, so I pressed on. "And that doesn't make me any less right. If I don't go with you, Noah's going to die." Jesse smoothed down my hair, cupping my face with his warm hands.
"If you go with me, you're going to die."
He pressed his forehead to mine.
"I can't have that."
He looked so broken, so sad and terrified, that I began to get very, very angry. So I did what I usually did when I get angry. I lashed out like an asshole, this time physically. My right hand snapped up and slapped Jesse lightly across the face, just enough to wake him up. He looked appropriately stunned, but at least I had his attention. "Fuck that," I snarled. "We are not letting this happen. So get your head out of your ass and help me make a plan."
"Okay. Jesus, did you really have to hit me?"
I steered him back toward the car.
"Probably not."
While Jesse got us off the freeway, I used his iPad to pull up a satellite map of Bronson Canyon, where the caves were. Jesse pulled over in an empty parking lot and looked over my shoulder.
"You're going to go high,"
he predicted, touching the screen to enlarge that section of the park.
It's not the most complicated trap. Killian and Sabine will be at the mouth of the caves waiting for us, but they'll put a couple of shooters up in the hills. They can pick us off easily.
How many, do you think?
I know Owen saw 7 people,
Jesse said, tilting his head at the kid.
But that seems low for a mission this big. They probably have a whole other shift, maybe 2, that patrols and guards their base of operations. Let's say 20, minimum.
But they won't send everyone, not if they're busy preparing for some big summoning, I pointed out.
True.
Jesse glanced down at the iPad in my lap.
If it were me, I'd send 3 shooters to cover all the angles, plus Killian and Sabine.
Okay. I stared at the map. I hadn't been to Bronson Caves since a day trip to L.A. back in middle school, but I'd been in plenty of other parts of the park. Isn't this basically loose dirt? I asked, gesturing at the hills that formed the edge of the canyon.
Yeah, hard to climb up. Harder to climb down.
I checked the clock. It was still so fucking early, not quite 7 in the morning. The Luparii had told Jesse to be at the park at 7:30, but we were already closer to the meeting spot than they'd anticipated.
I have an idea.
I dialed Will, who sounded just as distracted as before.
You know how you said some of your werewolves wanted revenge against the Luparii?
There was a brief pause, and then Will said warily,
Yes? Is now a good time?
Chapter 27.